For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into
the home team.
And here we go.
All right, rolling into hour number two, Chris and Jeff, till 6:30 tonight with coverage of Georgia basketball on deck. 6:35 pregame and 7 o'clock tip, Georgia at Ole Miss this evening. Remember, we got another hour of dog talk for you now every Monday through Friday here on the Ref Dog Nation Daily with Brandon Adams from 12 until 1. You can catch that right here on 960. The Ref. You have arrived now at the moment for just the most scintillating 20 minutes we do every day, the 5 at 5. And it's brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's start with some Falcons and some playoff talk. How about that?
Yes, sir. Sounds like a plan.
And I mentioned last hour, somebody on Twitter was threw out there, like, who would the Falcons rather play in the NFC Championship game, Green Bay or Dallas? Which brings me to question number one, and that is, you know, other than nothing, obviously, what worries us about Seattle Saturday?
Well, Seattle's defense, when you look at what Atlanta does well, throw the football, and listen, they got great backs too, excellent offense, but Atlanta is a pass-first football team, and even without Earl Thomas, they've still got Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor back there. They can rush the passer, and Chris, with that defensive line that Seattle has, they make enough of a stalemate. Bobby Wagner, I think single-handedly, assuming that defensive line can create the stalemate with the offensive line, is good enough to shut down that Atlanta running attack. Now, I remember back in 1997, we had a great team at Georgia, and Robert Edwards was running wild. Well, man, Takeo Spikes just absolutely shadowed him the whole way, and we just couldn't consistently get much growing on the ground, and we came up short. And that's what I think about when I see the way that Wagner can run. And then for Seattle offensively, the improvisation of Russell Wilson, that's what really worries you. And I'll tell you, Chris, watching the game the other night, I know Detroit doesn't have a great defense. Of course, neither does Atlanta. What's the back's name? It's not Burroughs. I get that Thomas Burroughs in my
Thomas
mind.
Thomas Rawls?
Rawls, there you go. He's a good back. Baldwin's a good slot receiver, but mainly it's that escapability of Russell Wilson that worries you.
Yeah, by the way, Bobby Wagner had 167 tackles this year.
The guy's unbelievable.
It's just a ridiculous a number. I mean, the Falcons' leading tackler was Deion Jones, who had 106.
Well, there were just a couple of plays watching that game where Detroit had it blocked. Like, they had a screen, they had a blocker in front, they had help, and Wagner can just shuck off that block and just explodes to the ball carrier. That's a huge concern. So I'm sure they're probably going to put, you know, talk about some jaw and Richard Sherman on Julio for most of the game.
Yeah.
When they're in man, and that's going to be a great matchup.
Well, you know, I guess it's maybe we'll see how things go away from Seattle, but there were even a couple of moments last week in the game where, you know, Atlanta experienced it in the game this season with that controversial no call on what looked like pretty clear pass interference on Sherman at the end of the game. But I don't know, when they're in Seattle, it does appear that they do get away with some stuff on defense that is called. Maybe they won't have as generous officiating this weekend when they're on the road. But Jimmy Graham's another one I would pay attention to for Seattle offensively. He had a better year for them this year than he did. I guess he was banged up a little bit in that first season he played with Seattle. But Atlanta was one of the worst defenses this year covering tight ends. And Keanu Neal, for the most part, had a solid rookie season. But I think back to the Kansas City game with Travis Kelce, who had like 8 catches for 140 yards. Antonio Gates had a pretty decent game. You know, Greg Olsen, Falcons faced them twice. He had about 6 or 7 catches in both meetings against Atlanta this season. So with Neal, who's been matched up sometimes on those tight ends as a rookie, that that's a matchup that's given them problems. Atlanta gave up 8 touchdown catches this year to tight ends, and so Graham would be one that kind of under the radar might, you know, remembering, yeah, he's still in the league. He doesn't play for the Saints anymore. He's on the Seahawks now.
Well, so what you're saying there, too, plus Baldwin, their receiver, he's a slot receiver, and you know Seattle's going to try and run power there with Rawls. Seattle is going to cue the Pat Dye. They are going to test Atlanta's manhood. They are going to try and control the middle of the field.
Yeah.
And if they can, Atlanta's in big trouble.
And this is a game. It's I would think if you're looking from the pressure of being expected to win, but at the same time also being the team where you're Matt Ryan, you're dealing with your 1-4 all-time in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Not that Seattle doesn't have anything to lose. Obviously they do. They want to get back to the Super Bowl. They want to get to the NFC Championship game again, but they've already been there, and they've done that. And they've been to the Super Bowl twice, and they've won it.
And they've won a playoff game this year.
Yeah, I mean, they're already 1-0 in the postseason, so when it comes to just the pressure and the tightness of the team being expected to win and really needing to win the game, you know, that's something that could impact the Falcons too. But, you know, otherwise, let's all worry about who we'd rather face next week in the NFC Championship game.
And golly, like you said, Chris, 3 of the last 4 meetings they've had have been decided by 2 points.
Yeah. But since somebody was asking that, though, I'll tell you my answer already would be Dallas.
No question.
I'll take them over Green Bay.
No question.
Unless Dallas, like, slaughters Green Bay, and then I would rather play the Packers.
I kind of think Dallas is going to win that game.
That's my now Wednesday lean. It was my Tuesday lean, and it's still my Wednesday lean. Falcons lines up to 5 today.
All right. If I told you, Chris, what if I told you, like 30 for 30, if magically you knew in one conference both of the top seeds are going to win, what would your guess be, NFC or AFC? So Dallas and Atlanta or New England and Kansas City?
AFC's the easy answer to that.
Because New England's almost a lock.
Yeah. And then
that's a toss-up, KC and Pitt.
Yeah, which I guess that game is the shortest number of the week. It started as a pick'em. I think Kansas City today is a slight favorite, but I like the Chiefs in that game. They're at home. Pittsburgh blew them out during the regular season.
Yeah.
But for me, both of the games in the NFC, I have more confidence in the Falcons than I do Dallas playing Green Bay. But even though both of those games are right around 4.5 or 5 points, I feel like they're really closer to coin flips.
I mean, it's one of those, and usually they'll tell you in the playoffs, just go with the team that you think's going to win. Don't you almost have to take the points with both Seattle and Green Bay, though?
I feel a little more strongly about that with Seattle, because it is crazy. Like, I was looking, and I know, I mean, you're talking about games that happened now over 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but the Falcons and Seahawks have played over the last decade like 6 or 7 times, and like 5 of the games have been decided by 3 points or less,
yeah.
including 3 of the last 4 times they've played that. Including this year. It's been 2-point games. Atlanta beat them twice in a row, once in the playoffs, 30-28, and then this year it was 26-24. But they had, like, in the mid-2000s, another time they played, and Atlanta beat them by 2. And then there was another game, I think Seattle won by 3.
Yeah.
So that's 5 times. You've had just these close games between these two franchises.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the art of fairness, obviously proven it's a TV show, you would think they'd have the AFC one day and the NFC the other, because the way it's set up, and the teams that played on Saturday last weekend play on Saturday again this weekend, that if you win that Saturday game, you've got an extra day for the conference championship games.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think they would play – the 2 AFCs and the 2 NFCs on the same day. So then, you know, both teams would have an extra day, or both teams wouldn't. But obviously the art of fairness is not at top. I mean, you can look at the 4 games, the first and second weekends, and 99% chance guess which ones are going to be on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I think you knew that this week, too.
Absolutely.
But for Atlanta, that you're talking about several hours, too, because the Falcons are playing the first game Saturday and the Packers and Cowboys are playing the last game Sunday.
That's a big difference.
And I don't know. I know they rotate. I don't know which one is first up this year, the conference champions. Is the NFC first or the AFC? Sure. I know they just rotate that every year.
Which that's also maddening sometimes because you'll have a West Coast game and it's like, well, come on.
Yeah.
So that's going to kick off. I think the Seahawks in one of their title games, they kicked off at noon Pacific.
Yeah, it's 2 years ago when they beat the Packers, they were first. So
yes.
I guess that means the NFC's first up. So the Falcons and if the Falcons win, they'll play the winner of the Dallas-Green Bay game at like 3 o'clock the following Sunday.
So that's where you were
several
taking,
hours head start.
Now, taking the actual football out of it, you'd rather play Green Bay because they're traveling back. They wouldn't get back to Milwaukee till late Sunday night, then have to travel to Atlanta, the Falcons, and get that extra day.
Yeah.
It's a factor.
Our buddy Ryan Goldstein doesn't want to hear about any of those advantages because I have pointed out to him that when the Falcons had that Thursday night game against the Buccaneers, that followed when Tampa had that five. Basically,
yes,
they played five quarters on that Sunday.
Against the Raiders.
But that will be actually a big boost. You kick off at 4:25 Saturday, and that game around 8 o'clock, and then – you know, the Packers and Cowboys won't end till about 8 o'clock Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, potentially Green Bay would have to travel. And I do think back 2 years ago, that Seahawks-Packers game was first up. So we'd rotate back now to NFC at 3 o'clock Sunday. Well, for the Falcons, we'll take it.
Just a thought.
Whatever edge you can get.
I mean, this is one of those, I don't know, probably one of the games will be good, one of them will be a blowout. Although, hopefully you got four,
One of them is going to be a blowout.
Well, I was talking about the NFC.
Oh, okay.
But hopefully you've got three good games this weekend because they all turned out to be duds. At least the Packers and Giants was entertaining, you know, through late in the third quarter.
Right. Yeah. But in the, for the fourth quarter was...
They pulled
just
away.
A bum rush, though. All right, for the Falcons, who other than Matt Ryan needs to be great Saturday? Who needs to step it up?
Who needs to step up? Vic Beasley, whether he's a spy on Russell Wilson or whether he is just rushing that passer, he's got to play good. And I just think, you know, you mentioned Kanu Neal. The middle of that Atlanta defense is really going to have to be good.
It's like with Deion Jones and Kanu Neal, those are Atlanta's top two tacklers. They both had really good rookie seasons. But the playoffs now for two rookies, if you think, all right, two of your better players on defense are these two rookies that you drafted. And that's great because it certainly gives you more hope and optimism for the future. But at the same time now, you're talking about the playoffs are different. And if these two rookies are what you're really counting on or who you're counting on to have to be good in the postseason, that could be a roadblock.
Well, you're also talking about hitting that rookie wall, too. Now, it's not quite as pronounced as you might see in some other sports, but you're coming off a college season. Let's take Neal, for example. He played 13 games at Florida the year before. And I know he's been banged up some this year.
Yeah, he missed the first, I think, three or four games.
So I'm telling you, sometimes an in-season injury can actually help you. You're a little bit fresher for the playoffs. I know that might sound a little bizarre, but for Jones, as he played 13 games at LSU the year before, now you're on game 17, you know, plus whatever time you logged in those preseason games. But I mean, this is just going to be one of those. Seattle is so tough and so physical, and I was really impressed with what they were able to do with their running game against Detroit in the second half last week.
Yeah, Rawls is a good back.
He's not Lynch, but he was running hard. And you know, and again, with what Wilson can do, you know, if they get that running game going, he's such a good ball handler too. Just pulled it out on the play fakes, and they are strong in the middle with Baldwin and Graham. I know Graham was nicked up last week, but they're going to really test Atlanta there. I mean, let's face it, for the Falcons to win this game, Seattle's defense is awfully good, but Atlanta's offense. I think Chris, you and I touched on this yesterday. You can talk a lot of times going into games like this. The biggest area of concern for your team is the area in which your team is weakest. But more often than not, it comes down to doing what you do well. And let's just look at Clemson Monday night. Their defensive line played great in the second half, and Deshaun Watson had an incredible performance.
Yeah. I mean, the Falcons' offense is going to have to live up to its billing that we saw all year. Now, in the first half of that game in Seattle, that first matchup, Michael Bennett was – he was getting to Ryan. They were getting some heat on him. So I guess you could throw Jake Matthews in there as another guy that's got to step it up and be really good Saturday, too, to help that, you know, give Ryan time and give them a chance to wreak some havoc against that terrific defense.
And Atlanta, I mean, Atlanta's got to try and run some, but I'm just telling you, Wagner, whew, that guy's a run-stuffing machine.
Yeah, the Falcons had a good rushing offense this year.
Very good. Two excellent backs and a tremendous fullback, even though it's Chris DeMarco's nephew.
Yeah. But what was Atlanta in rushing this year in the league? They finished fourth in yards per attempt, averaged 4.6.
There's no doubt. And just eyeball tests, too. There are not too many combos better than Freeman and Coleman.
No. And both of those guys, too, are good receiving backs,
mm-hmm.
too. All right, moving on in today's 5 at 5, we'll shift gears and talk some college hoops. Jeff, you will be with the Lady Dogs tomorrow as they play at South Carolina. The men tonight play at Ole Miss. So Georgia hoops the next 2 days. What are we looking at?
I think, Chris, for the win, for the men, a win is absolutely essential tonight if you're talking about postseason hopes. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, if Georgia doesn't win tonight, that you're looking at a very good chance of them having a little – losing Saturday, too. They play at Florida.
Yep.
So, I know you don't – winning on the road isn't something you want to say is an automatic, but road teams in the league this year have been pretty dominant so far.
Now, I think the Georgia men have really got to have it tonight. Georgia's had some tough luck, as we brought up the last couple times over in Oxford, but the Dogs have just flat-out got to have it. And here's the other thing, too. Even going back to November and December, this has kind of been the theme. Can Georgia find that – consistent third score to go along with Mayton and Frazier? And you got to understand, for Frazier, as good as he is very small. So if you've got an athletic 6'3", 6'4", guard, you can really hound him. And I think you'll see a lot of teams as the season moves on. I mean, even if you play an old box-and-one type deal, you might just see teams with athletic bigger guards just chase Frazier the whole possession.
Well, you know, I've started to think about that when I've watched Georgia play this season. You know, going back to last year when it felt like Kenny Gaines and Charles Mann had, you know, disappointing seasons, but it occurred to me that they might have allowed Frazier to have year that he was, though.
Well,
and now not having them, all of a sudden Frazier is the focus and teams are, you know, because last year teams are probably clamping down on Gaines and Mann.
Well, for sure. And Mann, even though he got in trouble a lot in terms of turnovers and getting in too deep, he could penetrate and Gaines could stroke it. So it helped balance out the floor some.
Right. And now without those two guys and the attention get paid to Frazier, he's not he hasn't been as lethal from three-point range. He also isn't taking as many threes as he was last season, but you know, maybe those opportunities aren't there because he's got more attention being paid to him without Gaines and Mann. So
that's where, you know, hopefully at least one of those younger guards, Harris, Crump, or Turtle Jackson, really emerges here in the second half of the season, because we're right at the midpoint of the regular season.
Yeah. I mean, you're starting to get – and like I've been pointing out, if you look at that schedule at the beginning of February, those four games in a row with three on the road,
mm-hmm.
Georgia's got to start – banking up some wins here and get off to better starts too. Basically all three games in league play. Well, I guess the South Carolina game was close in the first half, and then the Gamecocks went on a run at the start of the second half. But terrible first half against Auburn,
right?
And a terrible first half Saturday against Missouri too.
You're exactly right.
Of course, Georgia won both of those games. They had bad first halves. They had a couple other games this season that weren't they losing to Morehouse?
Yeah, it was back and forth.
And even even Gardner Webb was like a 3-point game at the half.
Yep.
So, good start tonight would be something. Kent Davidson needs to get into a fight before the game.
Lady Dogs got their hands full tomorrow night. Transition year, South Carolina's rolling. So, I'll tell you this, you know, South Carolina fans, say what you will. For years and years, I mean, they were terrible in women's hoops. And we'd go play over there. We'd always have our booster clubs great. They'd always take a couple of buses. There might be 600-700 people at that game, and we'd have 400 of them. Obviously, it's an easy drive for Georgia fans. When we were over there last season, and first of all, when they were here 2 years ago, they brought 3,500 fans. They had 16,000 people in the Colonial Life Arena. It is sold out tomorrow night. I mean, that place used to be just a ghost town. And the only noise that was being made was from Georgia fans who made the trip.
So if you win, they'll come.
They will come. You know, they've always been raucous in baseball.
What is their – what's their record?
They're 13-1.
Okay. So UConn won last night for the 90th straight time.
Yeah, so I guess they weren't too nervous. They were loose.
Did they cover? I never looked at the final.
I didn't see
they were
the
favored
final.
By 30 and a half.
That was so funny on today's headlines tonight. UConn warming up. They don't look nervous.
Right.
Well, no, they've won four straight national titles in 89 consecutive games. And, oh, yeah, they're favored by 30 and a half.
And this is like the – apparently this is – like the second time they've actually had a 90-game winning streak or something.
Yeah, they had another one, I think, maybe in the first part of the 2000s. They won three titles in a row. I mean, he's had a stretch where he's won three straight and four straight.
They did cover last night. They won 102-37. Against the South Florida team that was, like, ranked. They were only had one loss.
They beat us down at the Bahamas.
So they covered the 30 and a half. Is 102 minus 37 more than 30 and a half?
That'd be 65. That's doubled.
Yeah, they covered and won for the 90th straight time.
Wow.
Good grief.
But, you know, they lost four starters, including your girl Brianna Stewart, was two-time National Player of the Year, was the MVP of the Final Four three times.
Listen, I know nothing about women's basketball, but when they were – I was watching some football game – early in the year when they were really promoting that they were playing Notre Dame.
Right.
And the analyst said something about for Notre Dame, because we've talked, like, they've lost five games over the last however many years and four of them are to UConn.
Right.
They said, like, this is the year to get UConn because the class they're bringing in, like, next year is ridiculous.
It's like, well, how much better –
like that, whoever, Carl Lawson, is that her name? One of, like, ESPN's, like, you know, women's basketball analysts made some comment about, like, this is the year if you're Notre Dame that you really, you need to beat UConn if you ever going to.
Oh, my.
And now
gosh.
They're winning, like, 102-37.
They did have to replace a lot of talent.
Well, and evidently
they've done it.
Well,
the class, it'll be freshman next season.
Is what's
yes.
replacing the talent they've lost. This is just their stopgap.
Yeah. Which is still not bad.
Apparently not.
I had three of their – I'm on the Wooden Award nominating committee. I got three Connecticut players on there and almost had a fourth.
I would just put their starting five down and maybe even their sixth man too. First one off the bench.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, let's wrap up today's 5 at 5. Now that college football is over, we just talked some hoops there. Who is going to be in the Final Four other than the UConn women? Talking men, though.
Let's see. Let's kind of spread it around a little bit. I like UCLA.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be the same old character.
Well, you know, Duke got pummeled last night by Florida State. So I know right now at this point Duke has a good record, but since Coach K is shutting it down, I'm going to guess that he doesn't think they've got the best team this year.
No.
I'm going to go have back surgery.
And that Grayson Allen. Could Villanova get back again? They're having a very good
year. They're 16-1.
Okay, let's go with Villanova.
West Virginia looked good last night, pummeling the number one team in the country.
All right, we'll go with Huggy Bear and Kansas.
You think Kentucky might be any good?
I think they're good. No, they're very good.
North Carolina, they're kind of funky, though. They lost to Tech.
No, but I mean, you know, they've got players, but they're not as good as they were last year.
Yeah, let's say Kentucky, Kansas, Villanova, and
I like UCLA.
And then UCLA. It's a safe bet at least one of those teams will make it.
Well, yeah, we could say, yeah, Kentucky, Kansas, UCLA, and
Duke, North Carolina.
Yeah, you're good.
Someone's going. All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system. A solution. We'll take a break.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.